Hello, first podcast episode of the year, even though it's already February. In this new year, we are leaving the lessons we learned behind us as we move forward to new opportunities. As I was saying in the previous podcast last year, I worked on a film role and I learned a lot. I'm really grateful for having had this opportunity. It was a dramatic part, and some of the emotions I worked through were negative emotions, and I felt them intensely from a deep place. Yes, I feel lucky that I was able to work on this role in depth and grow with the character. I felt that I had the chance to work on this part more thoroughly than usual, and because of it, I experienced a lot of growth. Initially, I approached the scenes with an open mind just to get the chance to discover how the character felt. And eventually, I found some dark emotions like fear, disgust, but also some lighter ones like hope. This film is a psychological horror, and it deals with a subject that is important to me, the objectification of women and violence and power play in relationships. Talking about the theme of power, I'm now back with the second part of Notes on Macbeth. We are starting from when Macbeth is preparing to kill Duncan.
If it were done when 'tis done, then 'twere well it were done quickly. If the assassination could trammel up the consequence and catch with its surcease success, that but this blow might be the all and the end all. Here.
But here, upon this bank and shoal of time,
we'd jump the life to come. But in these cases, we still have judgment here, that we but teach bloody instructions, which being taught, return to plague the inventor. This even-handed justice commend the ingredients of our poisoned chalice to our own lips. He's here in double trust. First, as I am his kinsman and his subject, strong both against the deed. Then, as his host, who should against his murderer shut the door, not bear the knife myself. Besides, this Duncan hath borne his faculties so meek, hath been so clear in his great office, that his virtues will plead like angels, trumpet-tongued against the deep damnation of his taking off, and pity like a naked newborn babe. Striding the blast,
or heaven's cherubim, horsed upon the sightless couriers of the air, shall blow the horrid deed in every eye, that tears shall drown the wind. I have no spur to prick the sides of my intent, but only vaulting ambition, which o'erleaps itself and falls on the other.
In this soliloquy, Macbeth is analysing if he should kill Duncan, weighing the pros and cons of the situation. Shakespeare is using imagery and language derived from horse riding and horses, such as a trammel and spur. In this speech, there are a lot of broken rhythms, like the use of the word assassination quickens the tempo in the speech. I discovered that long thoughts are connected to feelings, so I can connect to a feeling to discover the thought process of the character and the dynamic of the thought. Short chunks of thought, long chunks of thought. As a group, we discovered how the play is also about the importance of legacy. Lady Macbeth calls her husband partner of greatness.
Of this have I thought good to deliver thee, my dearest partner of greatness, that thou mightst not lose the juice of rejoicing by being ignorant of what greatness is promised thee. Late to thy heart and farewell. Glamis thou art, and Corda, and shalt be what thou art promised.
Lady Macbeth and Macbeth have broken dreams as a couple. They haven't been able to secure their legacy. This is alluded to when she mentions that she's lost a child in the speech.
Have given suck, and know how tender it is to love the babe that milks me. I would, while it was smiling in my face, have plucked my nipple from his boneless gums and dashed brains out, had I so sworn as you have done to this.
When the murder occurs, it is Macbeth alone that raises the dagger and kills Duncan. After this act, he has less need for Lady Macbeth. Macbeth and Lady Macbeth are symbolically separated by this act, as she will never know what it is really like to kill, while Macbeth will be haunted by the murder from this moment on. The rest of his life is an attempt to live with this deed.
Methought I heard a voice cry, "Sleep no more. Macbeth, does murder sleep? The innocent sleep. Sleep that knits up the ravelled sleeve of care, the death of each day's life, sore labour's bath, balm of hurt minds, great nature's second course, chief nourisher in life's feast." Still it cried, "Sleep no more," to all the house. "Glamis hath murdered sleep, and therefore Corder shall sleep no more. Macbeth shall sleep no more."
In order to give life to the play as an actor and to create an atmosphere, it is good to visualize a map of the castle so that you know where everyone is in the castle and where the murder of Duncan is going to take place. I visited the Luberon region in Provence this summer. I went to the Marquis de Sade castle in the town of La Coste. I filmed in the castle with my phone and made a short film, and I thought how I could use the memories when I work on this play as an actress and I can visualize and stimulate my imagination. The castle is mostly a ruin, but some of the rooms remain and are decorated with beautiful furniture and paintings. There is also a ruin of a large window and walls, and this looks really striking and evocative. We're in Act 2, Scene 3. The morning after the murder of Duncan. A drunken porter answering the knocking at the gate. The porter plays the role of a devil porter at the gates of hell. He lets in Macduff and Lennox, who have come to wake Duncan. Macbeth appears and greets them. Macduff exits to wake Duncan, then returns to announce Duncan's murder. Why is the character of the porter introduced? After a super tense dramatic scene, the audience can relax with a comic scene. The porter represents a different class, a lower class, and because of this, because of his lower status, he can observe what is going on in the castle.
To be thus is nothing, but to be safely thus. Our fears in Banquo stick deep, and in his royalty of nature reigns that which would be feared. 'Tis much he dares, and to that dauntless temper of his mind, he hath a wisdom that doth guide his valour to act in safety. There is none but he whose being I do fear, and under him my genius is rebuked. As it is said, Mark Antony's was by Caesar. He chid the sisters when first they put the name of king upon me, and bade them speak to him. Then prophet-like they hailed him father to a line of kings. Upon my head they placed a fruitless crown, and put a barren sceptre in my gripe, thence to be wrenched with an unlineal hand, no son of mine succeeding. If it be so, for Banquo's issue have I filed my mind. For them, the gracious Duncan, have I murdered, put rancours in the vessel of my peace, only for them, and mine eternal jewel, given to the common enemy of man, to make them kings, the seeds of Banquo's kings. Rather than so, come fate into the list, and champion me to the utterance.
In this speech, Macbeth is arguing with the audience, saying that he believes he is the rightful king. He's justifying why he murdered Duncan. And this is because he now believes that he is the rightful king. He needs to control the chaos he has created. He's actually creating a lot of control. He's still restless and insecure. Because after the murder of Duncan, Macbeth, that Banquo's heirs will seize the throne. Macbeth is desperate to control the situation, so he hires a group of murderers to kill Banquo and his son Fleance. They succeed in killing Banquo, but not his son. As long as Fleance is alive, Macbeth's position of power remains unstable.
Notes had, all spent, where our desire is got without content. 'Tis safer to be that which we destroy than by destruction dwell in doubtful joy.
Lady Macbeth speaks to a version of herself, expectations versus reality. The reality is different from the expectation, and the expectation justifies the act. At a feast that night, Banquo's ghost visits Macbeth, and he raves, fearful of the apparition. Lady Macbeth tries to repair the situation, but the Scottish nobility is showing resistance to Macbeth's kingship. Lady Macbeth tells her husband to go and rest, as she's aware that he has not been able to sleep at all.
Oh, full of scorpions is my mind, dear wife. Thou knowest that Banquo and his Fleance lives.
Macbeth goes to seek the counsel of the witches, who show him more prophecies. Here I've chosen to do a speech from Hecate, who in Macbeth is the mistress of the three witches. And she's really angry with the witches because they interacted with Macbeth and they conjured up a prophecy without her knowledge and consent.
Have I no reason, beldams as you are, saucy and overbold? How did you dare to trade and traffic with Macbeth in riddles and affairs of death? And I, the mistress of your charms, the close contriver of all harms, was never called to bear my part or show the glory of our art. And which is worse, all you have done hath been but for a wayward son, spiteful and wrathful, who, as others do, loves for his own ends, not for you. But make amends now, get you gone, and in the pit of Acheron, meet me in the morning, thither he will come to know his destiny. Your vessels and your spells provide, your charms and everything beside. I am for the air, this night I'll spend, unto a dismal and the fatal end. Great business must be wrought ere noon, upon the corner of the moon. There hangs a vaporous drop profound, I'll catch it ere it come to ground. And that, distilled by magic sleights, shall raise such artificial sprites, as by the strength of their illusion shall draw him onto his confusion. He shall spurn fate, scorn death, and bear his hopes above wisdom, grace, and fear. And you all know security is mortal's chiefest enemy. Hark, I'm called. My little spirit, see, sits in a foggy cloud and stays for me.
The witches tell Macbeth that he is incapable of being harmed by any man born of woman, and he will be safe until Birnam Wood comes to Dunsinane Castle. Macbeth feels secure because he knows that all men are born of women, and the forest cannot move. When he learns that Macduff has fled to England to join Malcolm, Macbeth orders that Macduff Castle be seized and that Lady Macduff and her children be murdered.
Wisdom? To leave his wife, to leave his babes, his mansion and his titles in a place from whence himself does fly? He loves us not. He wants the natural touch. For the poor wren, the most diminutive of birds, will fight her young ones in her nest against the owl. All is the fear and nothing is the love. And little is the wisdom where the flight so runs against all reason.
When news of his family's execution reaches Macduff in England, he is stricken with grief and vows revenge. Prince Malcolm, Duncan's son, has succeeded in raising an army in England, and Macduff joins him as he rides to Scotland to challenge Macbeth's forces. The invasion has the support of the Scottish nobility, who are appalled and frightened by Macbeth's tyrannical and murderous behaviour. Lady Macbeth, meanwhile, becomes plagued with sleepwalking. She sees imaginary bloodstains in her hands.
Yet, here's a spot. Out, damned spot, out, I say. One, two. Why then, 'tis time to do it. Hell is murky. Fie, my lord, fie, a soldier and afeard. What need we fear? Who knows it? When none can call our power to account. Yet, who would have thought the old man to have had so much blood in him? The Thane of Fife had a wife. Where is she now? What? Will these hands ne'er be clean? No more of that, my lord, no more of that. You mar all with this starting. Here's the smell of the blood. Still all the perfumes of Arabia will not sweeten this little hand. Oh, 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 oh. Wash your hands. Put on your nightgown. Look not so pale. I tell you yet again, Banquo's buried. He cannot come out of one's grave. To bed, to bed. There's knocking at the gate. Come, come, come. Give me your hand. What's done cannot be undone. To bed, to bed, to bed.
Before Macbeth's opponents arrive, Macbeth receives news that Lady Macbeth has killed herself, causing him to sink into a deep and pessimistic despair. Nevertheless, he awaits the English and fortifies Dunsinan, to which he seems to have withdrawn in order to defend himself. Certain that the witch's prophecies guarantee his invincibility, he is struck numb with fear. However, when he learns that the English army is advancing on Dunsinan, shielded with boughs cut from Birnam Wood is indeed coming to Dunsinan, fulfilling half of the witch's prophecy. In the battle, Macbeth hews violently, but the English forces gradually overwhelm his army and castle. On the battlefield, Macbeth encounters the vengeful Macduff, who declares that he was not of woman born, but it was untimely ripped from his mother's womb. Though he realizes that he's doomed, Macbeth continues to fight until Macduff kills and beheads him. Malcolm, now the King of Scotland, declares his benevolent intentions for the country and invites all to see him crowned at Scone.
Wherefore was that cry? She should have died hereafter. There would have been a time for such a word. Tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow, creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death.
Out, out, brave candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage, and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.